This is the Planta on the Line program here at thecommentary.ca. Joining me now from Ottawa is the columnist, Don Martin, whose national affairs column appears in the National Post, the Calgary Herald, and other CanWest papers throughout the country. He is the author of a new book, Belinda, The Political and Private Life of Belinda Stronach, 3495, published by Key Porter. Mr. Martin documents the life and times of Belinda Stronach thus far, arguably one of the country's most fascinating and controversial political figures today. His previous book, King Ralph, The Political Life and Success of Ralph Klein, was a bestseller. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Don Martin. Good morning, Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. Why a book on Belinda Stronach now? And I guess some of the critics have written, was there a need for a book?
Well, that's probably a fair observation. I signed on to do the book deal back when Belinda Stronach had just crossed the floor and basically stopped an election in its tracks. And she was in the middle of this media frenzy on her romance with Peter MacKay being on the rocks. I had every expectation after that that she might well be a Liberal leadership contender one day. That hasn't seemed to have been the case. But you know, frankly, she's kind of interesting on multiple levels. I mean, not only is she a bit of force of personalities, but she's been a big player in the business world and has obviously graced the glamour pages and the society pages. And then she's had more color and spunk and impact, I think, on Parliament Hill than probably any other MP. So I think there's a point to be said that she hasn't had a huge legacy of political accomplishment yet, but as a personality, I think she's rates a biography, and it may rate a sequel at some point in time.
You've observed political affairs in this country for a long time, covered a lot of politicians. Is she, you say that she has color and spark, is she a substantive political person, do you think?
Well, I think that's something that has yet to be fully determined, and that, of course, that's contingent on whether she sticks with politics, which is by no means a guarantee. I mean, she has come into her own a little bit in the Liberal Party only in the last little while. She's now head of the Women's Caucus. She's taking a more active role inside the caucus meetings. She's going to have a fairly significant impact on the convention coming up because her push to change convention from delegated conventions to one member, one vote, I think, is going to probably pass, and she'll be a big push behind that. You know, you could look at her cabinet performance, and it barely fill a couple pages. In fact, it doesn't fill more than a couple pages in the book because she was only really a minister for a couple months, and there wasn't a whole lot of chance to initiate anything. So she hasn't had a chance to have a wallop of impact on the political scene, but if the Liberals come back, which I don't think is likely, but if they do in the next election, she'll be in cabinet, and then I think she'll have she'll have the experience, at least, to start having a greater impact on the political scene.
You dedicate the book to, you call them your four angels. I assume that's your wife and three daughters?
That is. Yes, I've got a little too much estrogen and not enough testosterone in my home.
What do they think as women about Belinda Stronach?
Well, I kind of use them as a bit of a barometer on how women generally are looking at her. And I got to say, she suffered a rather severe blow amid the allegations of the Ty Domi marriage breaking up, and she was named in the divorce papers as the other woman. That's obviously a black mark, if it's true, on Belinda as a mentor for women. But, and of course, there's always the difficulty women having connecting to someone who's got you know, $500 million to her name and has nannies to look after the kids. But, you know, they look at her as someone who has given up, a fairly substantive business career. I mean, she was president of Magna International, one of the largest auto parts manufacturers in the world. And then she gave that all up to run for politics at a fraction of the salary, which she donates to charity anyway. So they kind of looked at that and said, this is a woman who at least has a public service soul about her and has nothing really to gain by seeking political office. So in that sense, I think she's looked up to by women, and certainly she gets an awful lot of requests to speak to women's groups. And so has she suffered damage from the Ty Domi affair? I don't know, but I'm just saying that recently, recent events have conspired to make her record a little uneven in terms of women's, as a mentor to women, but generally I think they look up to her.
president and CEO of Magna. It's the company that Frank Stronach founded, her father.
Right.
How would you gauge her success as a business leader?
Well, that's interesting because Magna was a bit of a company that was running on autopilot. It has sort of semi-autonomous operations all around the world that sort of send the checks home to head office. And as long as they're all moving along and meeting expectations for profits and revenue, there isn't a whole lot of interference from head office. And that's the era that Belinda Stronach stepped into to the presidency. Well, I mean, was she put there because Daddy wanted one of his own to be the president? Absolutely. I mean, Magna has its own little business culture, and she was always seen as the guardian of that culture. But on the other hand, I mean, she is credited with a number of business initiatives that have contributed substantially to the profitability of the company, and she was sort of the first to see China as an emerging market. That was 10 years ago, and she certainly excelled at getting the company managers motivated, which is really what the presidency's job is in Magna, to make sure the staff and the managers are all highly motivated and energized. It's interesting that the stock price peaked under her presidency and has never sort of gone back to it since she stepped aside, and neither is revenue. Now, that may be cyclical, but it's also something she can claim that if I was just an empty-headed figurehead, I would probably have seen the stock market take it out on the company, and they never did. So I think you could argue she's at least can claim some success as the president of the company.
So she decides to leave Magna to enter political life. October 17, 2003, that's the date that you write in the book, is, I guess, most Canadians hear about her for the first time in terms of political life.
Right.
I guess it was in your paper, The National Post, that it was reported that she had played a significant role in the merger of the Conservative Party. What was her role, and was it significant?
Well, she had Peter McKay and Stephen Harper, who didn't particularly like or trust each other, eyeing each other from across this Rubicon that they had to cross in order to make this merger happen. Now, I'm not saying that Belinda Stronach was the architect of this. Some people say she had more impact than others. Brian Mulroney, I interviewed for the book, and he credits her enormously for making this happen. Others say her role was primarily to make sure Peter McKay and Stephen Harper stayed at the negotiating table. Once they got to the table, she had no role, they say. I would argue that, I mean, she put some money into the cause. She definitely made sure that this was going to be a rewarded experience for both, and that if they didn't merge, she was warning both of them that Bay Street was no longer going to support either party. So that gave them a clear impetus to get this merger on track. But once it became clear that both leaders, Stephen Harper of the Canadian Alliance and Peter McKay of the Progressive Conservatives, were going to make this happen, I think it's my view that Belinda Stronach really had no role at that point in time. And she only ran for the leadership of the re-emerged party because she felt that it should be more than just a Stephen Harper triumph and coronation over the new creation. She thought it had to have some competition, and otherwise she probably wouldn't have got into politics at all.
Oh, let's go back to that for just a sec here about going into politics. What's her drive? What makes her want to go into political life then, and what keeps her in politics now, do you think?
That's one of the great mysteries, because I did the math, and she could earn her political paycheck in like 4 days of working at the Magna plant and the CEO suite. So it's not money, it's not power, because she had far greater power in the business community and traveled the world and mixed it up with rock stars and political stars and business stars. I think the reason she sort of got into politics is twofold. One, that leadership contest didn't produce a worthy challenger to Stephen Harper, so there was no Mike Harris, there was no Ralph Klein, there was no Bernard Lord that was stepping forward to say, I want that leadership too. Secondly, she's a woman that's got a sense of personal pride, and she's always been derided as daddy's little girl, someone who doesn't get anything unless daddy gives it to her. And one thing that Frank Stronach could never do, despite all his money, was run successfully for politics. He ran in 1988 under the Liberals and got soundly thrashed. And Stronach looked at that and said, you know, if I don't win this leadership thing, I'm still going to run. And everyone sort of thought, yeah, yeah, that's easy for you to say now, but you're not really going to do it. And in the end, she did. And she won, albeit by a narrow margin. And I just think this sort of vindicated her a bit. This made her feel like she could do something that her dad couldn't do, and her dad was very proud of her for doing it and doing it on her own. And that seemed to be what drove her into politics. And she's also motivated, frankly, Joe, by a desire to do, you know, reasonably good things. I mean, if you watch what she's doing in the House, it's business-focused. But behind the scenes, she's doing an awful lot of stuff for constituents that don't make the headlines that are also pretty effective from a political standpoint, which is what you want your local MP to be doing.
Now, you speculate in the book as to some sort of competition between her and her father.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she went into politics and sort of, you compare her to George W. Bush and Paul Martin,
mm-hmm.
to sort of avenge their father's, I guess, failures, if you will.
Right.
You broached that with her. What was her reaction to that?
She didn't take too well to that. She's fiercely independent, at least in her own mind, believes that she does not necessarily just perform on command by her father, and there is some evidence to back up that. I mean, an awful lot of Frank Stronach's business associates just say what they think he wants to hear. Belinda's one of the few people apparently in Frank Stronach's world who can tell Frank he's barking up the wrong tree on a business call and get away with it. So she's quite able to challenge him. And she just says, you know, she said to me pretty loudly and clearly that, you know, there's obviously something that to my having the name Stronach on the back of my birth certificate that allowed me to get into the executive suite of Magna. She not disputes that, but once she got there, she insists that her father's role in controlling her was minimal. And in fact, she says she only really talks to him every week or two, and beyond that, the two of them really haven't got much to do with each other business-wise, and since she became a politician, it's about the same. So she takes great umbrage to being called nothing but sort of a dilettante who's treading on daddy's good name to get where she is and using the company checkbook to finance it. She seems to treasure and demand that we understand that she's really an independent thinker and an independent doer.
We're talking with the columnist Don Martin, whose columns appear in the National Post and Calgary Herald, the author of a new book, Belinda, The Political and Private Life of Belinda Stronach, 3495 from Key Porter. In terms of her family, you mentioned Frank Stronach and how often they talk with each other. The sense that I got reading the book is that it's a sort of dysfunctional family, is it not?
Oh, yeah. It's not your average mom and pop in the 1950s family unit, that's for sure. I don't even know how to describe it. For starters, Frank Stronach and his wife Frieda live apart for most of the year. He lives in Vienna. He's got a castle there. He has a residence in Switzerland that's basically used there for tax purposes. He has residences in Colorado and Florida, and let's put it this way: the guy lives. The guy's a citizen of the world. Her mother lives in Aurora in a house that can't be more than 200 yards from Belinda's house. I mean, it's a family compound. Belinda, her brother, and her parents each have three houses on this 700-acre estate house in the middle of a booming town of Aurora, north of Toronto, where the corporate offices are also on this site, and the company golf course is just within sight of the house. So, I mean, it's kind of odd how you have this clustered family living geographically, yet personally, they're scattered a bit. I mean, Belinda doesn't see her mother that often, and while I think it's kind of it's not a bad relationship, it's not like they spend a lot of time together. And her brother lives within sight of her across a pond from her house, and yet socially, they're about as consistent as you can possibly get. I mean, he ran into her in the middle of the election campaign, and she talked to him and sort of gave him a handshake and a pat on the shoulder and a hug, and everyone thought it was just some sort of campaign worker or something, and it turned out to be her brother, who really doesn't have much to do with her and tends to spend all his time focused on learning about horses, the horse race side of the family business. So it's a very unusual family. It's not like Frank Stronach went out shopping for a wife because he wanted to have children with someone with good genes, and that's how he picked his wife in Vienna, or just outside Vienna in Austria. And, Belinda and her brother, as I say, don't really get along. So, I mean, if you want to call that dysfunctional, go ahead, because I think it is.
Now, when you set out to write this book, you sought her cooperation. That was obviously important to you. One of the conditions was that you weren't to talk to her children.
Right.
Any insights into her relationship with her two children?
Well, she's very protective of them. There's a lot of security issues around the Stronach family. I mean, Belinda's had a number of stalkers and lots of death threats after she crossed the floor, and she's been publicly tarred and feathered, not only by Peter McKay, but recently by a political pundit named Norman Spector, who called her a bitch, basically. And, she endures a lot of public attention and in some case, slurs as well. She doesn't want her kids to be exposed to that. They're in their early teens, and there's a boy and a girl, and they just are fiercely protected against that public spotlight by their mother. And I couldn't talk to them, and I only glimpsed them. I had dinner with her and her daughter one night, but I'd only saw her son from waving at me in the television room. So. She doesn't want any part of them in books or politics or in the public spotlight. And when you go on election night and you were watching her, her kids are barely visible off to the side with their, with the bodyguard and all that sort of thing. So she just feels that the public spotlight's not a place for young teenage minds, young teenagers to be exposed to. And she makes sure that you can't get near them. And yet I think it's a fairly close relationship. She sort of calls them her roommates, which is a little odd for her mother, but watch them together and you get a clear sense that it is a fairly close relationship, at least by the Stronach definition of close.
Now, let's move on to the crossing the floor, her defection to the Liberals. Was that guided by ambition, as a lot of people have suggested, or was that just a distaste in the direction of Stephen Harper and the Conservatives?
A bit of both. Clearly, her relationship with Stephen Harper was a factor. He was, he had a particularly feisty confrontation with her a few weeks before she did cross, where he warned her she'd never be the leader of the party and to stop working against him and to be a team player. And she insists that, frankly, she had no intentions of seeking the leadership and was not trying to be a disruptive influence, and all she wanted to do was play a role in the party. Well, that's for those two to sort out who's telling what side of the truth on that one, but it was fairly clear that that was a relationship that was had been poisoned right from the leadership race earlier, and that Stephen Harper is deeply suspicious that Belinda Stronach was trying to undermine his leadership. There is a little bit of proof that she never really downed tools in terms of her ambition to be the leader, but I don't think she was actively working to undermine him at the time he accused her of doing so. Why did she cross ultimately? I mean, it was just a combination of factors that suddenly fell into this almost happenstance where she ran into former Ontario Premier David Peterson, a Liberal, and sort of poured out her heart a little bit to him, and he sort of got the idea of defecting in her mind, and it all took place over less than 72 hours from the moment it became an idea to when it was announced. So it really, actually a bit more than 72 hours, but less than 100 hours. It wasn't like she sat and thought long and hard about the ramifications. Now, was she ambitious to run for the Liberal thing? Well, she didn't run for this leadership run, and if she didn't run here, I don't think she's going to have a leadership opportunity for some time yet, so it can't have been driven by ambition entirely, but she certainly liked the idea of being a cabinet minister, like the idea of being the minister in charge of some sort of democratic renewal, which she never really did anything with when she got it. So I'd say it was she couldn't stand Stephen Harper, he couldn't stand her, and she thought she saw a better opportunity on the other side of the floor, so she took it.
Having viewed her up close, and as I said at the outset, you've viewed a lot of political figures over the last few years, do you think she's naive in any way?
Yeah, she's naive about when she does things, she doesn't see the ramifications in their global context. I mean, I tried to argue with her. I said, you know, you really handed the conservatives the government in the last election. She goes, well, what do you mean? And I sort of explained it. I said, well, you know, you started the merger rolling, which was a thing that had to happen for the conservatives to ever have a hope of forming government. You ran for the leadership, which gave Stephen Harper a real meaningful victory as opposed to sort of a token victory that he would have had if it was just him versus Tony Clement. And finally, you delayed that election that he probably wasn't going to win in the spring until the fall, and gave the conservatives all summer to organize, to fundraise, to get their policy ideas lined up, so that when they finally forced the writ to drop in November of last year, they were ready, and Paul Martin's liberals weren't. So she sort of says, no, it's not possible. It didn't really happen. And I said, well, you tell me where I'm wrong in my logic, and I'll listen. And she really couldn't make much of an argument, but she just sort of thinks things through for what's good for her, and sometimes that isn't the good thing for the party in general that she's in at that point in time. So, but, you know, beyond that, I think she's such a nice woman. A lot of people don't think of her in those terms, but she can bond instantly with strangers. It's quite interesting to watch her campaign on the street because people are a little bit of an awe of her when they meet her for the first time, but it takes about 10 seconds for them to feel quite at ease with her. It's quite different from her father, who can be sort of a bit gruff and all about me-ish, if you will. And so she's a different product than her father in some ways.
I guess the last question I want to ask, and I guess this sort of sums up her life and her career for public consumption, at least thus far. She's been the brunt of a lot of attention. You mentioned slurs earlier, a lot of criticism. Do you think that some of that is undue or excessive?
I think all of it's excessive. I mean, you know, she's been dragged through the mud as being the homewrecker on the Ty Domi marriage. Now, no one can tell me that Ty Domi, his marriage, wasn't in trouble long before Belinda Stronach ever came along. And frankly, she's a family friend, or he's a family friend. It wasn't just her. It was her dad as well. She's denied there's anything to it. He's denied there's anything to it. And yet, it's become part of the culture that they are, that she was the homewrecker, and that's sort of tarred and feathered her with the scarlet letter and all that sort of thing. Whereas on the second go-round, Peter McKay sort of inferring that she's a dog by pointing at her seat in the House and saying, you know, nasty things. And I'm kind of going, and then he denies it, and everyone says, well, then it didn't happen. Well, it shows up on the tape, and it got a handful of liberals swearing affidavits that said it really happened. Of course it happened, and yet he's going to get away with that. And finally, Norm Spector, former chief of staff to Brian Mulroney, calling her a bitch out there because she defected, and supposedly this homewrecker is just completely over the top. When you think that, I'd like to know what Norman thinks David Emerson is if Belinda's a bitch for defecting after almost a year in the conservative ranks, or over a year in the conservative ranks, only to, you know, and while Emerson defects after, you know, 2 weeks after he's elected as a liberal. And it just seems so unfair, and I don't always like to say, oh, she's being picked on because she's a woman, because I think that makes it too simple. But in this case, I think she's got a justified complaint that this is just way over the top criticism of her strictly because of who she is, and it's really not rooted in any reality.
Don, thanks so much for joining us today.
I
guess this is the book on Belinda Stronach thus far, but I guess there's more to come, I suppose, from her.
Well, there's at least another chapter, I would say, if these shenanigans keep going. You know, I'm not sure she's going to be long in the political world. You know, she has a fairly short attention span, so she may be in her last term. But either way, I don't think Belinda Stronach's going to disappear from the Canadian landscape and completely.
Well, thanks again, and continue good luck with this book.
Great. Thank you, Joe.
Belinda, The Political and Private Life of Belinda Starnach by Don Martin, 3495, published by Key Porter.